ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो ध्यायमुदीरयेत्। ओम। Good, welcome back. I think we're towards the end of the current chapter in which Bhishma is telling us a story of Manu giving some very profound Vedantic instruction to Brihaspati. And to summarize the whole prior part of this chapter, we were joking about getting out of the rat race. That really is what this is all about. Getting out of the rat race, and many of you were in the meditation session, we discussed at length the irony of how we run around like rats. By the way, you've all seen pictures of rats or mice on that treadmill they put in the cage. So we're all running on that treadmill like that. Running after what? Running after what's already here now. The fullness and completeness and divinity, that is your true nature, the true source of contentment and peace, which is within. And we, meaning many people, spend their lives in this rat race looking for that source of contentment and peace in all the wrong places. So the earlier part of the discussion was about the necessity to get out of the rat race. But it's not so easy, right? All of the people, by the way, I consider all of us here are already out of the rat race. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here today. That's the way it works. You'd be racing around someplace. You'd be at the mall or at a restaurant or something like that. So the fact that you're here today means you're out of the rat race. But consider your other family members and friends who are very much engaged in that rat race. If you were to ask them the question I asked you during the meditation session, that is, do you realize that the true source of happiness is within? If you were to ask them, do you understand that? They would all say, yes, of course, right? So what is it about the rat race that is so compelling that even though we know the true source of happiness lies within, even still, most people find themselves somehow compelled to be engaged in that rat race, and that's what we're going to discuss today. You can fix that, please? The hearing aid? Yeah, thank you. So, we'll pick up the thread then. So, in this discussion. All right. Vishayeshu cha samsargat Vishayeshu cha samsar Shashvatasya na samshrayat Shashvatasya Manasa chanyara kangshan Manasa chanyara Param na pratipadyate Param na pratipad. Last line. Param, the supreme, referring to Brahman, referring to that true source of contentment and peace that lies within, your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, that param na pratipadyate. People don't find it. People don't obtain it. Why? Because they're too busy in the rat race, which is what the first three lines talk about. So why do people not turn their attention within to seek that fullness and divinity? Three reasons are given here. First reason, Vishaye Shucha Samsargat. Due to samsarga, association would be a better translation. Due to being associated with Vishaya, worldly objects. Due to being engaged in the pursuit and use of worldly things. I think about some people's fascination with gadgets. When the latest version of the iPhone comes out or something like that. A lot of people are very much focused on these gadgets. So to be focused on anything is an example of that. So Vishaye Shucha Samsarga, due to their association with worldly objects which are sought, why you think that that brand new iPhone, eventually it'll be iPhone 25, not yet, but it's coming. iPhone 25, you'll be in line to get that one because it's got all the coolest new features on it, and being possessed of that new phone with all the new features will make you happy. Of course, you get it. So this is the first line, Vishayeshu Samsargat, because people are attached to objects are seen as sources of happiness, and because shashvatasya nash samshrayat, counterexample, nash samshrayat, because people are not looking, are not literally not depending upon, not seeking what they're not shashvatasya. They're not engaged in the pursuit of the eternal. Shashvata means eternal. Here it's used as a code word for that divinity within. That of you, which is eternal, is certainly not your body, not even your mind, but rather that divine presence within, Satchidananda Atma. So first reason, people are too busy chasing after iPhone 25. Second reason, people are not seeking that which is eternal. So iPhone 25 will make you happy for how long? You can answer that question, right? Until iPhone 26. So when iPhone 26 comes, then this iPhone 25 is an old piece of junk. You're stuck with this old piece of junk. You want iPhone. Anyway, you get the idea that these worldly objects are ashashvata. They're not eternal. So first line, people are attracted to these non-eternal, apparent, fleeting. Let me rephrase that. Sources of fleeting happiness, and they're not seeking the eternal source of happiness. Nice way to summarize the first two lines. People are seeking fleeting sources of happiness and not seeking the source of eternal peace and happiness within. And for those reasons, and one more, manasacha anyat akangshan. Akangshan. Being, seeking out and being emotionally dependent on all of this worldly stuff, manasa, with the mind, anyat akangshan, seeking things other than that eternal source of contentment and peace within. Second line talks about atma. Third line, anyat akangshan, people who are seeking things other than atma, seeking how? Manasa, with their minds, not just with their minds, with their bodies. Also, so such people, na pratipadyate param, they will not gain the supreme. They will continue to run that rat race. And remember our conclusion about the rat race. Our conclusion about the rat race is not, the conclusion about the rat race is no one wins a rat race. It just goes on. Like, picture that rat on a treadmill. When does the rat reach its destination? What destination? It just goes on and on and on. That's the nature of the rat race. Now, a little more technical analysis of this problem. Sayam gunavati buddhir, sayam gunavati buddhir, guneshwevabhivartate, guneshwevabhiv, avatarabhinisrutam, avatarabhin, gireshringarivodakam, gireshringarivodakam. Sa iyam gunavati buddhihi. Sa iyam buddhihi. This is the nature of the mind. Buddhi, intellect, but here, just mind. Sa iyam buddhi. Such is the nature of the mind which is gunavati, which is endowed with gunas, which is engaged with gunas. What are those gunas? You know well, sattva, rajas, and tamas. What does that mean in terms of a mind being gunavati, engaged with those gunas? So a mind which is engaged with sattva guna is a mind which is pleased. We all want a mind which is pleased. You think that's a good thing, right? What happens when your mind is no longer pleased? I'll come back to that in just a moment. Let's see all three, and I want to come back and make a very important point. So the mind, buddhi, is gunavati, has these three gunas. Let's take it from the other order, tamas. Every one of us, we love to sleep. And rest and relax. That's tamas, right? And yes, there is a physical need, but this attachment and dependence on this relaxation and sleep is the mind's engagement with tamas. Rajas, everyone likes to be engaged in activities and all kinds of I think about the kinds of movies people like to watch. It's very indicative. Because I've noticed that these action movies are always popular. There's some of the biggest draws at the post office. Probably not post office. Possibly the box office. They're the biggest draws. Maximum number of people seem to go after these action movies. Rajas! People like all that activity. And then finally, the sattva, and let me make that point a little bit more clear. Definitely sattva is better than rajas or tamas, but if you are fixated with keeping your mind in a certain condition, a condition of being pleased, pleasant, good luck. Because before long, something will come along and disturb your mind, and then you're going to be back into the struggle. Rajas, working really hard to bring that repose and comfort back to your mind. This is the problem of life, trying to create a condition for our minds. Whether that condition is tamas, sleep. Everyone really wants a good night's sleep, and if you don't get that good night's sleep, then you're disturbed. Rajas, everyone likes to be engaged, no one likes to be bored. And even sattva, everyone likes their minds to be pleased. And a problem with this is seeking a mental condition is another way of looking at that rat race. One way of looking at the rat race we've already discussed. Here's another way of envisioning the rat race. The rat race is trying to maintain a certain condition of mind. The mind is always changing. And there's another observation we'll see in just a moment. I made a note here, just a funny metaphor to share with you. How about if we look at sattva, rajas, and tamas in terms of foods? So sattvika foods, you know very well. Healthy foods. Rajasa foods are the really spicy ones. And tamasa foods, donuts. Fat. Actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says tamasa foods are things that are old and worn out and polluted in some ways. Anyway, but some people like that. By the way, this I don't want to tell you what to eat, but cheese is what? Really old milk. Sorry, but that's what it is. Cheese happens to be really old, especially the European cheeses. I should differentiate. Paneer you make right away. But European cheeses, in fact, the older they are, and I don't get this part. Yeah, allow me just a completely silly aside. In France, yeah, they all these cheese connoisseurs, and apparently the smellier the cheese, the better it is. I don't get that. That's tamasa. So look at this. Some people like those tamasa foods, smelly cheese. Some people like rajasa foods, all of the spicy foods. Some people like sattvika food. But even that's a problem. Even liking sattvika food is a problem because when it's not available, how do you feel? You're upset. The goal is to transcend these gunas. Major topic of Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He talks about these three gunas. And he also talks about the necessity of becoming guna atita, beyond the gunas, so that your contentment and well-being doesn't depend on any of these three. That's the problem. Now, in the second half of the verse, he gives us very vivid metaphor for the mind. So the mind is always seeking what it wants. So some people's mind seeks that tamasa enjoyment, like the smelly food. Some people's minds seek rajasa things, like spicy food. Some people's minds seek sattvika things, sweets, technically, are sattvika. So doesn't mean... It means you're still seeking. And as long as you're seeking, you're on that treadmill. You're in the rat race. So the rat race is over when you stop seeking outside and start seeking the true source of happiness. But the mind by nature is conditioned to seek outside. That's outside seeking is very natural. What's described in the second half. The metaphor, look at the very end. Eva udakam. We have to take those two words apart. Girehi shringat. Eva udakam. Eva, just like udakam, water. What kind of water? Water which is avatara abhinisrotam. Abhinisrotam, a stream of water. Srota abhinisrota, a stream of flowing water, which is avatara, coming down. Where is it coming down from? Girehi shringat, from the shringa, the top, the crown of the giri, of the mountain. Girehi means of the giri, of the mountain. So girehi shringat, from the top of the mountain, water flows down. Gravity. And this is an illustration of nature. Now you think, oh, how beautiful. The water is flowing down from the top of the mountain. That happens to be very beautiful, but what we're talking about here is just like water naturally flows downwards, the mind naturally flows towards sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa. Vishayas, objects. And that natural flow of the mind is what creates this rat race. Which means to get out of the rat race is radical. And it is. It's absolutely radical. As radical as that stream of water turning around and going back up. How amazing that would be. It's going against gravity. And just as that stream could go, well, stream can't, but you can. You can what? You can't go against gravity, no matter how hard you try. But what you can do is go against the natural tendencies of the mind to chase after sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa enjoyments. The mind is programmed. My gosh, how programmed we are. From childhood onwards, in fact, before childhood, you're already programmed by your genes. You're genetically programmed, and then your parents do some programming. Then your teachers do some programming, and then your boss does some programming, and of course your spouse does some programming. So we're constantly subject to all this manipulation and programming leads us to wonder, how can we come out of all of that programming? And the wonderful thing is, we can. In spite of the strength of all of that programming, and it's strong, admittedly, it's very powerful, and especially the programming of our minds to seek sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa enjoyments. No matter how intense that programming is, we always have the capacity to go against our programming. That's free will. And that's the most powerful evidence of free will, and that is no matter how deeply programmed we are, we can, through the use of two factors. One is intellect, recognizing the necessity to come out of the programming, and then willpower, the drive to come out. If you have both, if you understand the necessity to come out of the programming, and if you make sufficient effort, no matter what that programming is, with understanding and effort, you can come out of any kind of programming, including this programming of the mind towards sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa enjoyments. Then, so now finally, having come out of the rat race, I just get this funny image. You've seen probably some kind of cartoon about hundreds of rats all going in the same direction. Imagine all hundreds of rats all going in the same direction. And there's one rat that stands up and says, "Wait a minute." Well, you and I, we're that rat. That rat that says, "Wait a minute, let me out of this rat race." As long as a rat is stuck in the rat race, there's no hope. But it starts, what did I say? First, recognition of the necessity to come out of the conditioning, to get out of the rat race. And then number two, effort. And the next verse, we'll talk about that effort.
Right here.
Yada nirgunam apnoti, yada nirgunam hapno, dhyanam manasi purvajam, dhyanam manasi. Tada prajnayate brahma, tada prajnayate. Nikashyam nikashe yata, nikashyam nikashe. Yada, when. Nirgunam dhyanam apnoti manasi purvajam. Yada, when apnoti, you obtain you obtain where? Not outside, but manasi, inside, in the mind, in your heart. When you obtain within, when you obtain what? Nirgunam dhyanam. Wow. Dhyana, meditation. Meditation which is nirguna, free from those gunas. That was our prior discussion, is that our mind is, let me say, our minds are addicted to seeking sattvika enjoyments, rajasa enjoyments, and tamasa enjoyments. So how to get out of the rat race is nirgunam dhyanam apnoti, to make the mind absolutely quiet. Nirgunam dhyanam. Nirvikalpa samadhi is what that's talking about. To make that mind, first of all, turned within, and then absolutely silent. And the purpose of the silence is to create an opportunity for what? So the first half begins yada, when the mind is made introverted and perfectly silent. The second half, tada, then pragnayate brahma. Then Brahman, the supreme, pragnayate, is known, is discovered. When the mind is made introverted and quiet, it is possible to discern the true source of contentment and fullness, which is within, as your own true nature. When you're, first of all, introverted means getting out of the rat race, and concentrated, focused, made quiet, ekagrata, one-pointedness of mind is also required. There's the effort. So those are the two factors we said again and again. Step one, recognizing the necessity to get out of the rat race. Step two, making the effort, turning your attention within to discover, and this goes back to the irony I made reference to at the beginning of this class. The irony is you're discovering what's always been there, correct? Is it that as a result of sadhana, you become divine, or is it as a result of your sadhana, you discover the already existent inner divinity? You understand that very clearly. But the irony, of course, is what is already present, the true source of contentment and peace, goes unrecognized. And it goes unrecognized because we fail to discern the true nature of our own selves. And just to make that very clear, your true nature, the essence of who you are, is consciousness. By consciousness, I mean that by which you know what's happening right now. You know what's happening around you. You know what's happening in your own mind. That, because of which you know what's happening around you and in your own mind, is consciousness. You have always taken that consciousness as being very ordinary. You take it for granted because it's always there. Anything that's always there, we tend to take for granted. But the message of the ancient rishis is this consciousness, which you take for granted as being something very ordinary, in fact, is something extraordinary. We fail to appreciate the extraordinary nature of our own consciousness. Why? Our minds are so busy with all the sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa stuff that we fail to appreciate our true nature. Therefore, yada manasi, when that mind, nirgunam dhyanam apnoti, when you obtain that condition of absolute silent focus within, tada, then prajñāyate brahma, then you have an opportunity to discover that which is already present, but unrecognized as what it truly is. Its greatness is unrecognized. That recognition takes place with the help of a silent mind. Now, let's be very clear about this. Is samadhi the goal? This is a common misunderstanding in spiritual life. People twist these teachings around. They think samadhi is a goal. It's not the goal. It's a means to the end. It's not the end you seek. It's something which helps you recognize your true nature. And he gives this brilliant metaphor in the last line. He says, it is yata, just as nikashyam nikashe. Both related to the same word, nikasha. Nikasha is a touchstone. A touchstone is something, if you have something gold, if you want to be sure it's gold, you rub it on the touchstone, and it's supposed to leave a trace. If it doesn't leave a trace, then you know it's not gold. So this is the idea of a touchstone. So yata, just as nikashyam is that which is discovered through a touchstone, which means gold. Nikashyam means gold. So just like gold on a touchstone, that's a very literal translation, the meaning of this, it's a very nice metaphor. In fact, I don't think I've seen it anywhere else. Very nice. If you want gold, suppose you've got something, I just need a prop. This is gold. You see that color? Suppose it really is gold, and I want gold. But I'm not sure. Is this really gold? Suppose it truly is gold, but I don't know it. Then what do? I have my touchstone, and I scratch it on a touchstone, and I discover that it's gold. With that discovery, I now know I have gold. But wait a minute, I've always had gold, right? Gold is not produced by the touchstone. The touchstone gives evidence that it's gold. I've always had the gold. I didn't know I always had gold, but with the help of the touchstone, I discover that it is gold and I've always had gold. This metaphor is brilliant because meditation is that touchstone. Meditation can provide evidence of your innate divinity, which has always been the truth, but often unrecognized as such. Notice, just like the touchstone doesn't produce the gold, in the same way, meditation doesn't produce anything. The touchstone helps you recognize the gold you've already possessed. Meditation helps you recognize your innate divinity, which has forever been your true nature. You get the metaphor? So you've had this gold for years and years and years, but you thought it was probably not gold. Then you discover, oh, it's really gold. You've always had that gold. The touchstone removes any confusion you had about the gold. In the same way, the practice of meditation doesn't produce anything. Even to say it produces enlightenment is an incorrect conclusion. What meditation does is give you the opportunity to discover the divinity you have always been. Very nice metaphor. I like that. Okay. Then.
guna bhavat prakritya cha guna bhavat prakriti nistharkyam yeya sammitam nistharkyam yeya nirgun yad brahma chapnoti nirgun yad brahma chap saguna tva nivartate saguna tva nivartate.
Start in the second line. Nistharkyam ngeya sammitam. Ngeya sammitam. That which we want to know is ngeya sammitam. That which we want to know or discover is that true source of contentment and peace within. Here it's called Brahman. Big word, that limitlessness. So, ngeya sammitam, that limitlessness, which is your true nature, is nistharkyam. It cannot be figured out. That's a nice way. Nistharkyam. Nistharkyam is that which cannot be gained through tarka. Tarka means reasoning. So you cannot figure out the presence of that Brahman. You might say, well, why? You know, if Brahman is always present and I fail to recognize it, well, can't I change my thinking and recognize it for what it is? Here's the problem, and that is we use tarka, reasoning, we use our minds to learn about things, objects, vishayas. Our logic and reasoning and the intellect and mind are extremely powerful to understand objects. That true source of contentment within is an object or is it you? Right? It's not an object. It's you, your essential nature, as consciousness. Consciousness is not an object. Consciousness is that which reveals objects. I'll say that again. Consciousness is not an object. Consciousness reveals objects. Therefore, your mind, with all of its powers, which are good for learning about objects, your mind and all of its powers are not very good for objectifying Brahman, which is not an object that can be discovered with the mind and intellect. And why? He says, guna abhavat prakritya. Prakritya, by nature, that Brahman, the reality you seek, is guna abhavat, because it has no gunas, no qualities. Our minds, as we saw two verses ago, our minds are always engaged in seeking after sattva, rajas and tamas, sattvika enjoyments, rajasa enjoyments, tamasa enjoyments. Which of those is Brahman? You think, well, it can't be tamasa, can't be rajasa. Then you think, oh, Brahman must be sattvika. Wait a minute. Sattvika, we saw before, is a transient condition of your mind. It's some pleasure your mind enjoys for a period of time. We're not talking about anything transient. We're talking about you, your essential nature, which doesn't come and go. The manifestation of sattva, rajas, tamas in your mind comes and goes. You don't come and go. You are that abiding conscious being by whom those transient experiences are known. So therefore, that abiding conscious being, which is you, is nistarkyam, cannot be figured out, can never be objectified. To be objectified means to be an object of thought, which means to say, I know it. Whenever you say, I know it, that it is different from you, the knower. So you are not an it. Remember your grammar? You had first person I, second person you, third person he, she, or it. So that true self, Satchitananda Atma, is not an it, nor it's not a he, she, or it, which means something separate from you. It's not a twam, it's not a you, because you, if I'm say you are separate from me. He, she, or it is separate from me. You are separate from me. So it leads us to first person. I cannot be an it. Sorry for this grammatical language, but you get my point. You cannot know yourself as an object. That's the point of the first half of the verse. Then he continues. Nirgunyat brahma cha apnoti. Brahma cha apnoti. Brahman, one obtains Brahman. Nirgunyat. We have to add the word manasaha. When the mind transcends gunas, Brahman can be discovered. Now that's a technical kind of language of Vedanta. When the mind transcends the gunas, Brahman can be discovered. What does that mean in terms of our discussion? The mind transcending gunas, nirgunyat manasaha, mind transcending gunas means getting out of the rat race. The rat race in which you're seeking sattvic, some rats are seeking sattvika enjoyment, some rats are seeking rajasa enjoyment, some rats are seeking tamasa enjoyments, but they're all seeking. Step one is get out of the rat race. Stop seeking gunas. Nirgunyat manasaha. Getting out of that rat race, brahma prapnoti. Brahman has obtained. Sagunatvat nirvartate. Sagunatvat, because of your continued involvement with guna. Saguna means to be with the gunas. To be with the gunas means to be continuing to seek sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa enjoyments, which means to still be in the rat race. So, sagunatvat, because of your continued pursuit of the gunas, because of your continued participation in the rat race, brahma nivartate, withdraws, as it were. Brahma comes to those who get out of the rat race. Brahma goes away from those who stay in the rat race. This is kind of a literal representation of what it means is, if you fail to get out of the rat race, good luck. Remember, no one wins the rat race. But if you get out of the rat race, there is a possibility of discovering the true source of contentment within. All right, then.
Yadate pancha bhi pancha, yadate pancha bhi pancha, vimukta manasa saha, vimukta manasa, atatadrakshyase brahma, atatadrakshyase manau sutra mivarpitam, manau sutra.
Nice metaphors in this chapter. You'll see at the end of the verse. Yada, when.
Te vimuktaha. When te, those people, vimukt.
No, te has to mean, for you.
Te vimuktaha.
There's some little grammatical glitch in this verse. I'm not going to bother you with these details. So, yada, when, panchabhihi pancha vimukta. When one becomes vimukta, completely free from what? Pancha. Shorthand, oh my gosh. Pancha means what? Panchabhutani. five elements. Five elements means what? Jagat, this world. So pancha represents the world. So the world, which is also made of three gunas, but here instead of three gunas, we have pancha, meaning pancha bhutani. So when one becomes free from the world, which means what? Free from seeking in the world, seeking sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa pleasures, which means what? Free from the rat race, to stay with our metaphor. So when one becomes free from the rat race, panchabihi, along with, so pancha, the five elements, panchabihi, look at the language. When you become free from five, along with the other five. You have to know, what are the five, and what are the other five? The five are the five elements. The other five are your five senses by which those elements are known. You say, how do you know it means that? Well, that's why we study Sanskrit and read commentaries and all of that, so the meaning becomes quite clear. It is like a shorthand, though, right here. So when you become free from the world, means free from the rat race, along with your five senses, when your senses are no longer focused out there on worldly enjoyment, sattvika, rajasa, tamasa, when your attention is turned within manasa saha, along with your mind, when your senses and mind are withdrawn from seeking in the world, when they are turned around so that you are seeking within, atta, then, drakshyase is in a second person. So here, Manu is addressing Brihaspati. Drakshyase, you will discover, tat brahma, you will discover that infinite reality within. When your mind and senses are withdrawn from the world around you and turned within, you will, and what a powerful statement, drakshyase, you will. He doesn't say you might. Maybe, maybe not. He said you will, drakshyase, you will discover Brahma. And then he gives, this is another wonderful metaphor. Just like manau sutram eva arpitam. You've probably seen this metaphor before, but maybe haven't appreciated this particular application. Sutra here refers to a string, which is the simple meaning for the word sutra. Mani means a gem. So gems strung on a string. So many gems strung on a string. That sounds a little redundant, but you get the idea. Now, here, interesting. Can you see the string? You can see, I'm holding up my Rudraksha. If anyone is listening to a recording of this, I'm holding up my Rudraksha beads, and I'm showing you. You see the beads. Can you see the string? So therefore, we conclude there's no string. What? Just because you don't see the string, you can't conclude that there's no string. In fact, it would be more reasonable to conclude that there is a string, even though you can't see it. But suppose we could remove one or more of these beads. If you could remove the beads, you would see the string. This metaphor represents what? In our context. So before he talked about nirgunam dhyanam. A string without beads is like a mind without thoughts. Every bead is like a thought. And the presence, notice these beads are stacked end to end. Therefore, there's no possibility of appreciating the string. In the same way, your thoughts are stacked up end to end. There's no gap between the beads. There's no gap between your thoughts. So it's hard to appreciate the presence of a string. Even though you know there must be a string, it's hard to appreciate the presence of the string. In the same way, in the presence of your end-to-end thoughts, it's hard to appreciate the nature of the consciousness by which they're known. So in this metaphor, just like these beads are strung on a string, we can say thoughts are strung on consciousness, the consciousness by which the thoughts are known. If we can create a gap between beads, you'll see the string. If you can create a gap between thoughts, you have an opportunity to recognize the nature of your consciousness for what it is. Nice reference to meditation. And I haven't seen this Mani Sutra metaphor is used in other contexts. It comes in the Bhagavad Gita with a very different meaning. So here, the Mani Sutra, Mani means gem, sutra on a string. So here, this metaphor is used to talk about meditation. If you can create a gap between the beads, you can discover the nature of the string hidden. If you can create a gap between thoughts in meditation, you have an opportunity to discover the true nature of your consciousness. True nature means the nature of your consciousness as the true source of contentment, peace, joy, and love. Okay. And that leads us to the last verse, which is typically verses, chapters like this will end with a verse talking about the fruits of the study, the results of the study. And he says, Tad Brahma Paramam Proktam, Tad Brahma Paramam, Tad Dhamma Paramam Smritam, Tad Dhamma Paramam, Tad Gatva Kala Vishayat, Tad Gatva Kala Vishayat, Vimukta Moksham Ashritaha, Vimukta Moksham Ashritaha. Tat Brahma Paramam Proktam. That Brahman. What Brahman? The Brahman, which is like the thread inside the beads. The Brahman, which is your consciousness on which thoughts are strung. By the way, to equate Brahman and consciousness is not as strange as it seems. One of the four Mahavakyas, the one Mahavakya drawn from the Rig Veda, is Prajnanam Brahma. Prajnanam means consciousness. Consciousness means that by which you know what's happening right now, in the room and inside your mind. And the rishis say that Prajnanam, that consciousness, happens to be Brahman. And if you say, wait a minute, how can my consciousness be Brahma? You're asking the right question. That's good. That's the right... just a quick aside. When the Mahavakya says Prajnanam Brahma, and you say, yes, correct. You've finished. Honestly, you'll never get it. You say, yeah, I know that. I heard it before. You're not paying attention. The consciousness which you take as being ordinary because it's always present, the consciousness by which you're seeing me right now, the rishis say that consciousness is Brahman. And your response should be one of two things. There are two helpful responses. One is confusion. Honestly, confusion is a helpful response because it means you're thinking about it at least. And the other is appreciation, knowledge. Wow, my consciousness is that Brahman. But what doesn't The undesirable and unhealthy, unhelpful response is Prajnana Brahma. Yeah, I read that. That's one of the Mahavakyas. Gone. You're just lost. So, here, Tad Brahma Paramam Proktam. That Brahman, which is your own consciousness, discovered by turning your mind and senses within for the sake of discovery, that is called param. Param proktam, that is said to be the ultimate goal. Tad-dhamma paramam smritam. Tad-dhamma, that abode, which is Brahman, which is your true nature. Paramam smritam is understood to be the ultimate goal of life. Param or paramam is that ultimate goal of life. Tad-gatva, having reached that goal, Tama, having reached what? That which is within is not reached by means of the rat race. So tad gatva, having reached it, how do you reach it? Kala vishayat, by turning your back on the rat race. The rat race is vishayas, objects which are obtained over time, kala. So kala vishayat gatva, turning your back on the world of objects obtained by means of the rat race, vimuktaha ashritaha moksham. Vimuktaha, they become liberated. Who are liberated? Moksham ashritaha, those who have resorted to moksha. Moksha meaning enlightenment or liberation. But please note our definition now of moksha. Our definition of moksha is the discovery of the true source of contentment within. The discovery of the already existent divinity of who you truly are. That discovery is moksha. You say, but Swamiji, moksha means liberation. Liberation from the rat race, right? When you discover that everything you've ever wanted, you already have, you become free of the rat race. You're in the rat race for the sake of seeking those sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa enjoyments, but as soon as you discover the true source of contentment within, you are freed from the rat race. There are no winners to the rat race, but there are those who get out of the rat race, those who become free of the rat race. Good. Nice place to conclude our class. Next chapter, by the way, is another story. This is a story of Manu and Brihaspati. Next is a story of Prahlada and Indra. That may sound like a little unlikely combination. Even Manu and Brihaspati sounds unlikely. So Prahlada and Indra, we'll see that discussion in the next class. Some important announcements today. One is once a month we have an advanced meditation session. That advanced meditation session is being held tomorrow at 6:15, advanced meditation. Then, this schedule. This coming Friday, there is a Vishnu Sahasranama recitation. It's being conducted by Vasanti, and it's being they do it in different homes once a month. So if you want to join the Vishnu Sahasranama recitation conducted by Vasanti, to find out where it's being held, you can email info@arshabodha.org, and you can find out where it is. And that program is Friday at 6:30 p.m., followed by dinner. Then one more announcement is, I mentioned earlier, that is based on our Jana Raksha community care program, where we are supporting a survey being done, a survey to find out your attitudes about mental health, your meaning primarily members of the South Asian community. So we invite you to fill out the survey. It'll take just a few minutes, so you can get a copy of the survey in the lobby. And filling out that survey will be very helpful, so please participate. Library will be open after class. We'll conclude with our prayers.